Hey guys, I'm Mark Potter. Welcome to another episode of Brushstrokes, a podcast powered by Canvas Magazine. Guys, I know it's a very, very confusing time, probably more frustrating than confusing in this day and age with the pandemic and social unrest, but I can only take this brief moment with you and remind you to be the buffalo. You know, I use that term a lot, and to remind everybody, the buffalo parable is that two animals are sitting in the field when the storm is coming towards them. The cow runs away and the buffalo charges towards the storm. And the moral to the story is that the buffalo is on the other side of the storm sooner. They're through it. The cow probably is stressed and the storm will still catch them. So as silly as it may sound, I encourage you all to be the buffalo. We need to push forward. You know, progress is really created by a few. And while it seems muddy, murky, foggy right now, we still need to push forward and engage. We need to connect with our audiences. We need to listen. We need to be thinking innovatively. We need to anticipate certain trends, which makes my conversation that I'm going to share with you today really, really relevant. But I want to encourage all of you to take a step forward and listen to your clients a little bit more deeply and connect with them, because this is the time of connection. Sure, it may not show in the bottom line or even at the top line right now, but this is the time to be empathetic. This is the time to charge forward by talking with your clients, learning about them, and maybe doing some exploratory stuff and being innovative just in your thinking. So I encourage everybody to be the buffalo. I want to let you know that this podcast is brought to you by Conduit Incorporated. That's our organization, and we do content marketing. And I believe passionately that content marketing is the way to engage deeper while we're distant. You know, we are in a socially distant world. Heck, we were already in a socially distant world. And so now more than ever, we need to still connect with people. I am super, super enthusiastic about print, believe it or not, in this world. I think that it will fill the emotional gap. But content in general, organic, authentic storytelling, is in fact the way to engage. And it has to come from experiences. And those experiences could simply be conversations. You know, we don't need to Google everything. I think that we in general are almost more informed, but maybe possibly dumber. We have to have real world experiences. We have to have real conversations, and we have to listen intently to uncover those stories, and then we need to share it with them. So if you want to talk more about that, if you want to find out a little bit more about what we do and how we think that we can help you fill the emotional gap right now, visit www.conduit-inc.com. In the meantime, I really want you to give this conversation today a listen. I am super excited that we had the opportunity to interview Jeremy Goucher, and we actually did this interview before COVID-19 came. So it's a few months old, but the reality is it's actually probably more relevant, because Jeremy is one of the number one innovation keynote speakers across the globe. And he's also the CEO of a company called Trend Hunter. And this is a website that you've got to visit, because basically they've devoted their time, their efforts to spotting trends. He is a New York Times best-selling author, and like I said, one of the most sought after keynote speakers on the planet. This Trends Hunter site is the world's number one trend website and innovation consultancy. They've got over 3 billion views and they've got like 3 million members. So what they do is they specialize in filtering opportunity and making change happen during times of chaos and change. And ironically, we're in a time of chaos and change. So you gotta give my conversation with Jeremy Goucher a listen. I'm super, super excited to have him on. I wish you guys all the best going forward. Give this a listen, be the buffalo, and let's push forward. Is this Jeremy?
It is. Greetings, Mark. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Not too bad at all. Where am I dialing you?
I am in beautiful Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Nice. How about that? Well, I'm in Toronto, so I don't know. Sounds like we're in the same climate.
Yeah, although it's not snowing up there, is it?
Not really. It did last night a little bit, but...
A little rainy, maybe? A little gray?
We're right around that.
Yeah, but are you based in Toronto or are you based in Calgary?
No, Calgary is where I grew up when I was a kid, but I live in Toronto or on Air Canada and United flights.
There you go. Well, more importantly, which hockey team do you root for?
Oh, well, that was Calgary Flames all the way along. You know, like, the way I say it, or the way I've heard it said, is that in Toronto, I'd be a fan, but I'm just still waiting for them to get a professional team.
They've had their troubles, that's for sure. Although, right? If you're paying attention this year, the Flames and the Oilers, they've always had a rivalry, but this year it's gotten a little fierce. I don't know if you've been tracking that.
Oh, yeah. They used to say, like, the tickets, they'd say, like, season tickets, $1,000. Or no, they'd say, for the football one, they'd say Calgary versus Edmonton, $1,000 for the game on September 3rd. Plus 10 free games.
It's amazing. Yeah, they go at each other. It's quite the rivalry up there.
That's how it goes. Yeah, I'm full of all the jokes about my rival city. And they say, what's the best thing coming out of Edmonton? The Highway 2 south to Calgary.
That's great. That's fantastic. See, that's a good chirp. And, you know, the hockey players, they're known for the chirps. Well, listen, I can't thank you enough for taking some time. And I know you're crazy, crazy busy. I'm super excited to spend a little time here with you and chat. I think it's a big deal for us. Some backdrop for you. We are, we do Canvas Magazine, and it is been going out to the graphic arts printing industry in North America for, 13, 14 years. A little bit taking a page from you in terms of running off and doing my own thing and creating this. I used to be in the corporate environment, so... You know, reading up on you.
And I saw that, 2007. So you and I probably jumped ship around the same time.
At the perfect time, right? When everything was, there was just so much money to be had. It's funny because I'm looking and I'm thinking, he wrote the book Exploiting Chaos. And I'm thinking to myself, it was perfect timing, right? Because it was a little bit of chaos.
That was my break.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what happened after that is that I didn't really intend for that to be the situation, but I started getting calls from Fortune 500 CEOs right when they went in their chaotic time. And you help one, you get to help another, you get to help another. Pretty soon you're the chaos guy. So yeah. Right place, right time, and a little bit contagious, and that kind of led to all of it.
It's kind of, that's part of one of the things. I mean, you can't really script that. I mean, I'm going to ask you a little bit about tactics and especially this new book, Create the Future, but... you know, there is a little bit of luck involved and some timing, because I know I was the same way. I launched it and I used to have a significant role at a big company, and I went off and I'm thinking, this is going to be a piece of cake. I got some people who know me and this is working out fine. And then I'll never forget, I was up at Kodak, and you know Kodak, you referenced them in one of your presentations, and they said, hey, Mark, we love your proposal. And however, we're about to lay off 4,500 people. And I went, uh-oh. And I think for the better part of a year, I slept with one eye open with my wife looking at me.
Oh,
like,
wow. Yeah.
You know, but yet I look back now and I think, could there have been a better time to build to build a brand and to build a following, right? And so that's got to be part of it, I think. Don't you?
Yeah, well, and this is a bigger part in the original Exploding Chaos, but some of the greatest startups were founded during periods of economic collapse. And, you know, the Disney, Hyatt, Fortune Magazine, Apple. But we don't think about it, but that's when the consumer mindset shifts. And if you're open to those shifts, then you're going to be in the right place at the right time.
Yeah. Well, tell me about you. So tell me, I mean, and, you know, I've seen the little clips on your website and the video, and dad was a venture capitalist, mom was a social worker. But tell me a little bit more about that. What, I mean, because you jumped in. I mean, did you have a pretty clear vision that, hey, this is just what I want to do? And did you find after a while, as you got into hunting these trends, that you were doing you, so to speak?
Well, you know, it's funny. The longer story of it is that, I grew up wanting to be an entrepreneur so bad, just like my dad did, but that caused me to be in this impatient search where all I was ever trying to do was figure out what the business idea was. And so then that kind of leads you to innovation, because that's where people go when they can't find their idea.
Right.
And then I started coding Trend Hunter in the wee hours of the morning, because I was trying to hope that some trend hunter somewhere would submit the little idea that would inspire my big idea.
Right.
And what I didn't realize is that Trend Hunter would become the big idea, and traffic started going from thousands to millions to billions of views. But in many ways, it's funny because it's sort of accidental.
Yeah. And tell me about the company today, because you know, a lot of the listeners wouldn't necessarily know, you know, what you guys do.
Sure. So Trend Hunter is now the world's largest trend platform. And what that means is we're this giant place where people share ideas, and we've got a database of about 500,000 ideas in every category, graphic design, print being ones that are related, or packaging innovation, but also fashion design, tech, pop culture. And what's interesting about it is you can cruise through and find your idea. And at the same time, in the back end, we're studying what trends, what patterns, what things are people actually interested in. And over time, we've had 170 million people come through the site.
We've
measured 3.5 billion of their choices. And so when you add that up, there's never really been a platform like this in history that's so capable of being predictive about what people are actually interested in. And not from like the Google search term sense of it, but the underlying trends and the psychology of what people are going after. So what we do as a business model is we help people, as we put it, find better ideas faster, either through trend reports or live presentations or sort of custom work. And I think at this point we've now done about 10,000 projects with pretty much every brand you can think of: Disney, Samsung, Red Bull, Google. We'll just keep on going down the list, and if it's a big brand, we've probably done something with them.
So, I mean, does it act like a crowdsourcing or a focus group? I mean, if Disney comes
to... Yeah, I mean, kind of.
Okay.
So Disney would come to us, and they would say, hey, we're looking to do some really cool new thing and an attraction, and we're looking for a new product that would be a toy that's exciting for moms. And, you know, there'd be some specifics to what they're looking for. And where that might normally take a research firm or an individual 2 months to deep dive and figure out, we could turn that insight around in a day. And in a day, we could make a flashing, inspiring 50-page PowerPoint deck that's got a couple hundred examples and data and psychology and you know, places and products all around the world that maybe line up to what they're trying to achieve. So it's a really neat machine, and it's, you know, it's 15 years in the making now, but at this point it's starting to become a lot of fun, because we get to be under NDA with so many cool brands and get to know where they're investing their money, and so we get to know a little bit about where the future is headed and then help the brands create the future.
Oh man, is that I mean, that's got to be it's got to be a blast, and you've got to be super proud to see it come to fruition, and what's even better is that, you know, you're spending time with guys like me, or you're doing presentations.
You bet.
No, seriously, I mean, and you can see it, you can see the enthusiasm, and I think that's a lesson in itself. And I don't get the sense, certainly you don't come across as someone who is, hey, this is all about the business. You're doing something that has become near and dear to your heart. And I assume that's kind of the culture of the organization.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So culture has always been a focal point. Here we are trying to coach other organizations on their culture. So we've got a team of people to think about that stuff. But then that also means internally we want to be best in class and trying everything that we're preaching. So I think if people have been here over a year, then the attrition rate is about 5% here. And in the top 16, our leadership team, there's basically been no attrition for years now. So, yeah, so people are having a lot of fun. And hopefully that shows in the passion in our events and in the work.
That's super cool. Tell me about, and we'll get to the new book and ask you a couple questions about some tactics and stuff. But let me ask you about better and faster, because obviously we're building the business. And then it was 7 years later, you said, hey, I'm going to write this other book. Tell me about that one.
Yeah, so for the first book, actually, Rewinding, Exploiting Chaos, when I had written that, it was really a collection of some of my favorite examples from the corporate world and all my studies and, you know, a couple jobs worth of experience, but that's it. But then, being in the right place at the right time, the chaos guy, I started getting to work with hundreds of different CEOs and brands. So when I came out with Better and Faster, that was my first deep dive into some of what we had learned with our trend platform getting much bigger and some of our client experience. So it was about 40 pages of getting you better at adapting to change, and then about 300 pages, whatever the remaining math is, about the patterns of trends. And so if you're really interested in patterns and trends and how those trends work, then Better and Faster is the book for you.
Yeah.
But the book that's come out now with Create the Future was sort of everything that we've been learning over the last decade and a half, the sort of collective wisdom of all of our clients and the tactics to make innovation and change happen. So it's a bit broader. It's full of tactics, workshop questions, tools, next steps. And I would say that the new book is sort of, from my best description, my complete archive of our battle-tested tactics and methods, where the other books were a little bit more specifically focused.
Yeah. Well, and let me ask you about that, because it is fascinating that you've spent your time diving into trends, because we've talked a lot within our magazine to this industry. As you can imagine, the graphic arts industry is actually fairly full of innovation, especially on the OEM side. We have some large brands like Canon that have done some amazing stuff with inkjet technology, and the technology that's coming out of some of these organizations is fascinating, and it enables remarkable communication. But on the flip side, the printing industry, the people that have historically put ink on paper, you know, they fall into some of what you talk about and with the myelin, where you're kind of developing that habit, you know what you're doing, and it becomes kind of conditioned, if you will. And so they've got to innovate. And where they struggle is they've innovated quite a bit on the cost side of the business, but maybe not so much on being innovative with the clients and saying, hey, what else can I do? So when you first think about creating the future and being disruptive in your thinking, does it start with the client?
Well, I think that there's this overwhelming theme that I was really trying to get at in the book, which is that you're probably closer to more opportunity than you think. And you realize this world is a big changing place. And whether you're the client or the agency, whatever your role is, the reality is you have more potential than you think. And there are many different paths you could be on. But with each layer of success, we get caught in a groove of repeating past decisions and maintaining best practices and the brand standards that we've aligned to. And so we get conditioned to be stuck in the situation we're in. So then if you're, I'm thinking of the client and this idea of like a focus group and asking people an old Henry Ford quote, if I asked people what they wanted, they would have wanted a faster horse.
Right.
And so you get caught in these grooves. So I think that fundamentally what I was trying to do in the new book is go through the 7 different traps of past dependency that cause you to get caught in a groove, but then the tactics for disruptive thinking that break you out. And those would technically apply just as much to the agency as they would to the client, because the problem is that if things are going well, it's too easy for both parties not to realize the full potential of what could be.
Right, right. Can you speak to, obviously I don't want you to give away the whole story, but you know, if you thought about our industry and in printing, what are some of the biggest traps that people fall into?
I mean, I think even in one sense, just calling it printing, because in reality, the printer is the creative partner that is helping to bring a brand message alive. And so if one thinks about their role in that capacity, then it starts opening up your mind to what else you might want to do. And so it's recognizing that in something like printing, you're a vital part of an organization's brand coming to life, mm-hmm. and that actually has enormous value associated with it. So you could continue to compete and be that lowest cost producer, lowest cost printer, getting the contract because you met on that part of the value, where you could recognize maybe there's more, maybe there's helping them with digital strategy, maybe there's helping to, you know, figure out where they're actually trying to go with a larger goal that they're after. And then all of a sudden you're not competing on a dollar per page index, and instead you're actually starting to get yourself into other pockets of value.
Right. As you've dealt with organizations who have said, look, this is kind of what we're thinking, have they gone through a process of saying, hey, I've got to, you know, I have a hypothesis, but I've got to validate this, and do I go to the customer, or do I go to the marketplace, and is it part of what you teach them to say, listen, that sounds like a good idea, but let's go validate that? Because I think that's where our industry struggles a bit. They've simply been waiting, hey, for the taking the order, or somebody's calling them and saying, hey, this is, I need this printed, I need it this time, and you know, we've been telling them, listen, I think you've got to have a deeper level of intimacy with the client so that you can go validate some new ideas.
Yeah, so the case study in the book that would be the most relevant is, I had the opportunity over several years to work with Tony Hunter, who was originally the publisher of Chicago Tribune. Okay. And at first I helped him with their digital transformation, but then one day he got called up and they offered him the job of CEO, but they wanted him to, you know, lay off 20% of the team, declare bankruptcy, shrink the printed paper, and sell more ads all at the same time.
Wow.
That's kind of a terrible situation, but this is the iconic pillar of their community that he'd been a part of for 26 years. So when the guy's offered the role of CEO, he takes it on and has to go through some of those tough steps. But trying to figure out what to do with it, he had a lot of different hypotheses for other pockets of value that the Tribune could get into, which wasn't simply about printing a paper. And what was interesting, which might also align to your printers, is one of the strategies, and we go through some of the methods of how to find these opportunities in the book, and the methods for proving and disproving and sort of expanding your thinking to see where you could go. Mm-hmm. And in one of the tool patterns, thinking for Tony actually led him and his team to push and realize that, you know, where the value is in a local paper. Your money comes a lot from the local advertisers, mm-hmm. but they come to you with a terrible creative that says, buy more stuff from us.
Right.
And actually, they're just small businesses trying to make their world better. So what they did is they transformed the Tribune by deciding that instead of just printing the ads, they would add the services of a marketing firm, effectively giving these small businesses full-on marketing services, just like an ad agency.
Right.
And that was so profitable that it helped turn the Tribune from bankruptcy to the most profitable news organization in America. And it's a neat example because it was about just printing the ads for these people or trying to understand the true value of what they're getting at, and then realizing there was a much bigger pocket of money and value that they could drive to those advertisers. So that's a neat case study for your people in a couple of ways, and that it's fully outlined in the book. And actually, Tony Hunter wrote the foreword on the second side of the book.
Oh, that's so cool! Yeah, I think that's fantastic, and it says something about, you know, getting upstream with the clients. I mean, it goes back to your work with Trend Hunters, and that is that, you know, you really need to know, it's what's going on in the general market. Sometimes we get so immersed in our own little worlds, and like you talk about, I mean, we just keep doing what we're doing that we can't break free. And I know that's something that's important to you in terms of the messaging that, you know, how do you get to this disruptive thinking? How do you step out? And it's got to be expanding your view. I mean, because otherwise, you're right. I mean, that would have been the easy thing, would have been to shut that down. Can you speak a little bit to the tactics to kind of get to that mindset? I know that, you know, I saw one of your videos where you had the little kids building stuff, and it's interesting. And it reminded me of another book called Mindset, where, you know, you've got fixed mindset and you've got growth mindset. But can you teach that new mindset in terms of innovative thinking?
Yeah. So what's really fun is that when I go through the seven different traps of path dependency, the thing is they relate to the traps of your own success, your neurological trap to repeat whatever led to your path, the ease of inaction. And each of them actually are fun because you can prove them. So the example for myelin would be that your brain starts to pave pathways so that you can repeat whatever you did in the past and be very, very fast at whatever it is that you're doing. Mm-hmm. And the fun little way to see how your myelin works. Myelin, by the way, it's the white matter in your brain. It's 40% of your brain. And think of it like little highways that tell your neural signals where to go. And the more you practice something, the more your little highway gets paved. And then suddenly you're better and faster at doing that thing the exact same way you did before. Mm-hmm. The catch is now you don't want to do it another way. So the simple little tool or the simple little thing would be cross your arms as fast as you can, and you can do it. You don't even think about it. But if I say cross your arms but exactly the opposite way, then you have to fumble around. It's not right. It's impossible. It's an easy task. Right. You fumble around just a little bit because your brain now mechanically has to say, oh, my arm goes there. And you can try it.
Right.
But that's an example of how your myelin has been set, and it helps things become natural. Now, if we get to bigger problems, each level bigger and more intellectual for you, myelin starts becoming more pronounced. So the example you're alluding to with the kids is I do this in groups all the time when I do my keynotes, and I'll say, what can you do with a paperclip? And seriously, what can you do with a paperclip? And I do this live. I've done it maybe 200 times. And people will say, almost in order, and I can usually predict 90% of them, but they'll say, you can use it to pick a lock. It can be a weapon. You can use it for a necklace. You can pop a SIM card. You can fold paper. You can trade it for a house and art. And they go through a list, and the average group gets to 10 or 12 different things.
Right.
And it's always the same, and I can predict it 90% of the time. The thing is that the average kindergarten kid can get to 200 ideas. And that's actually a test from the 1950s called the alternative use test. But what it goes to show is that what happens to the adult is we just go back and revert to the things that we've done and seen and decided before. And that's why the list of what you can do with a paperclip is predictable. But a child, myelin in that area is not formed, and they've not really seen what you can do yet. So they just think all over the map, and it's much more creative in the end. That's, again, just a paperclip. When we start rolling this into your world, it just becomes so easy to think, oh, I know how to approach, now, you know, if it's printing business you're in, I know how to approach printing and a contract and serving a customer. And it's easy to get so caught in our ways, even just from a neurological point of view. And that's just one of the seven traps.
Right.
But there are all sorts of ways you can get out of that. And there's different ways you can look at your problems from different perspectives and different patterns and questions that you can ask. You can simulate starting from scratch. You can imagine how a competitor in a totally different market would approach your market. And as you start going through these things, you look at your problem from different angles, you break free from your myelin, and that's just one little example. But what happens as you start doing these pattern exercises is you form new myelin that helps you look at your problems from different perspectives. So that's one example, but there are multiple different traps that impact us. And if you start to understand how they hit you, then you can easily start to counteract them and then build your way towards a more creative and ideally successful future.
Yeah, I think that's super stuff. And obviously, I think this is a really neat book, Create the Future, Tactics for Disruptive Thinking. Our industry needs it. And I think we're heavily conditioned. There's a lot of reasons why. And it'll be fun. I'll let the listeners read the book and learn more. But, you know, you spoke a little bit to tactics, and it's interesting because we've talked before about that some of these businesses need to start thinking about exactly that. How would a competitor come in and disrupt? And what if you had if you were working with a net, right? If you had millions of dollars in the bank and you had the time to do it, what would you do? People just don't seem to get that. But that's a useful tactic, I would think, and you've got to find the time. I assume people get so busy and worried about wasting their time or not getting that, but it's probably the most critical thing they could do, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. You need to put in the effort. And I mean, this is actually relating to the seventh trap I get into, which is the ease of inaction, which is that it's just easy to go back to doing what you got to do. There's just so much stuff going on in your world. And you've got tasks and emails and meetings and schedules and demands from your clients. And you just add it in and then you layer in your personal life. And wow, we're just busy as people. And so if things are going well enough, we don't put in the extra effort. And yet that extra effort could go a very long way. And so the idea would be if you can even set aside some time to be pushing yourself for more disruptive thinking, whenever that's going to be, then you can break free. But a dangerous trap is the ease of inaction, the ease of doing nothing different at all.
Mm-hmm. And I imagine that you've got to have the right people on the bus too, right? I saw this video or this tweet from Nick Saban, coach of Alabama, and he was saying high achievers can't stand mediocre achievers and mediocre people can't stand higher achievers. He says we spend the beginning of the year trying to get, you know, the right people on the bus and the wrong people off the bus and then, you know, hard charge towards it. But there are people that not just it's not just the miling, it's their, hey, I'm just trying to get to the finish line. You know, the motivation, you know, I'm X amount of years old and I don't necessarily need to be thinking about changing the world. And so that goes back to something you said earlier is culture. But clearly you got to find the right people as well, right?
Sure. And I suppose that, guy writing a book on disruptive thinking like me is writing it for those people that are on the ambitious end of things.
Right.
And I'd say for every time you feel frustrated by someone else's inaction or lack of opportunity, that should paint the picture for you on how much opportunity you have in the world to actually be one of the disruptors who's making your idea a reality. Because the fact is, yeah, our world is full of all sorts of people who don't want to push harder, act sooner, never give up. And so if you're one of those that has the rule-breaking energy to go out and take what's yours and figure out something inspiring and creative, you can do it. And your ambition will translate into results.
Yeah. So let me, and so I'm not going to keep you too much longer, but I'm curious about how, as you got into this and, because I think there's so much data in the world and there's so much information in the world. And I've said to people, listen, the information age is over. It's really about context. Is that what the trend hunting is? I mean, are you looking almost for...
Yeah, so that's you're at a perfect description of our business model, which is that it's a world of total chaos and information overload. So what we do for our brand is all custom research. And it's saying that you have trends and reports and magazines and newspapers and research and inspiration. You go to conferences and the world's changing quick and now you're overwhelmed. So what our whole business model relies on is sort of you finding better ideas faster. How do we use data and insight to get you better ideas and do it much, much faster? And I think a lot of those tactics spread through the book as well, which is that in the Create the Future kind of goal, what I've been trying to do is help people think about how you would more efficiently get to your disruptive full potential and recognizing that, you know, if you can think about how to find an overlooked opportunity, then you're going to be more successful than simply working hard.
Yeah. And I think this book, I mean, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I got to believe it's obviously there's a lot of passion behind this because I do think there's a bit of an epidemic in this world and this type of thinking, breaking free is important, right? I mean, we can talk about conditions, but I really get nervous that the next generation, I worry about them. You know, I've got kids and I worry, I look at them and I'm thinking, gosh, you know, they don't necessarily have experiences and I'm worried about the way they think. And, you know, they're still teaching the same stuff. You know, we do some stuff, some magazines in the higher education segment and you know, you look at that world and they're teaching the same stuff. I wonder if they're able to teach critical thinking, because that truly is where I think value is created and a difference. And so is that part of it? Is this part of why it's a labor of love?
Yeah, I think there's a danger that in our world of automation and sort of optimization, the way we look at it with our brand clients and the innovators we're helping is right now there's more tools than ever before for you to micro-optimize. On your website, you can look at the click and the exact thing, and you can shift the button over, and there's all these little things to help you get a guaranteed 3-5% increase, and you know that hits your annual goal or whatever. But that's not the kind of thinking that helps you get to the completely next level. And so that's what the book does. And I think we absolutely are in a danger of being in a world where there's just too many little tools that help you micro optimize, as opposed to really trying to find the path that you could be on.
Yeah, I think it's fantastic. I can't wait. All right, let's do shameless plug here. So the book is Create the Future: Tactics for Disruptive Thinking. There's also a handbook. So tell them, you know, obviously I'm assuming we can get them in the normal places that everybody buys books, but tell me the date. It's getting released here soon, right?
Yeah, March 10th is when it's out. And if you go to createthefuturebook.com, we've got a couple extra freebies there for you as well. But otherwise, it's anywhere books are sold.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And then if they wanted to check you guys out, where would they go?
Well, you can go to createthefuturebook.com and just hit some of the other links, or you can go to trenthunter.com, which is the world's largest updated collection of cutting-edge ideas. And we have a lot of stuff in print and design that could be inspiring for some of your readers.
Oh, that's awesome. I think that's fantastic. Well, I can't thank you enough for taking a few minutes and chatting with me. I think, like I said, it was a big coup for us to grab you. And I'm super thrilled because this fits right with our industry. It's something that we've been kind of trying to preach. And now there's a book that they can all get and start thinking a little bit differently.
Perfect. Well, thank you very much for having me on. And good luck in creating your own future.
All right. Go Flames.
All right. Have a good one.
All right, Jeremy. Take care. Well, guys, I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Jeremy Gaucher. I think that you will agree he is a remarkable guy. And if you go online and check out more of his content, I think you'll agree that he's someone to follow. And I would certainly check out Trend Hunters, his organization. Certainly read his books. I think the new one is Dead Nuts On, Create the Future, Tactics for Disruptive Thinking. It is embracing what your potential is and going beyond the stuff that maybe you didn't think was in your grasp. It'll inspire you to realize what you're actually capable of. And I just can't thank him enough for taking some time to spend with us. Like I said, he is a remarkable guy. A reminder that this podcast was brought to you by Conduit Incorporated. As I said to you before, there's a new recipe needed, quite honestly, a disruptive idea around engaging the marketplace and selling and aligning sales and marketing. And it really is rooted in the creation of content. We are super proud to have a whole host of clients that understand the power of acting like a media company and using someone like us to engage their marketplace, listen sincerely, and regurgitate the kind of creative, thoughtful content to the broader market in order to build trust and develop leads. And so if this sounds like something you need, check us out at conduit-inc.com. My thanks again to Jeremy. My thanks to you, to Conduit. I really, really appreciate it. I can't tell you how proud I am of this podcast and the fact that
it seems like a lot of people enjoy it and the work that we're doing with Canvas in general. So I hope you guys have a wonderful week. And until we talk again on another podcast, remember, be the buffalo.